need to assure the community that there will be a full accounting, that this officer will be held accountable. We're also calling on the community to take action, but take action constructively and nonviolently. We're here to support them as the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People and to support the folks on the ground who've been in this community for years and who represent the community that Michael Brown grew up in.
And I understand that the St. Louis NAACP has met with the local police. Do you know yet if the police have spoken to these witnesses? We've played two witnesses now giving such a divergent account from the police account of what happened.
Well, what I'm aware of is that the St. Louis president, Mr. Pruitt, has spoken to these witnesses in conjunction with the Justice Department, and that the NAACP is assisting this effort in terms of bringing forward witnesses who have credible testimony and offering a safe space for them to come forward. It's important that we preserve the integrity of this testimony, that we convey to the community that it is safe to come forward, and that what you say, any evidence that you may provide, will be taken seriously. And to the extent that the NAACP represents a trusted vehicle, we are happy to do that under very difficult and sad circumstances.
This is St. Louis County Police Chief John Bell Morgan speaking Monday about how police responded to the demonstrations over the weekend.
We really felt like that with the emotions running as high as they were with the shooting the previous day of Mr. Brown, that we didn't want to add to any of that. So later in the afternoon, it became very clear that special operations from the county was going to have to deploy, and they in fact did.
That is the St. Louis County Police Chief John Belmar. Antonio French, I wanted you to describe more what is happening on the streets and how you, as a St. Louis alderman, one of the youngest, decided to get so deeply involved with this. You are nonstop tweeting, sending six-second videos all through these protests.
Yeah, and so it really started just hours after Mike Brown was killed. Even while his body still laid on the ground. The local newspaper here ran a quick story with a headline that police shooting leads to mob reaction. That offended me, frankly. It was not a mob reaction. It was a justified community reaction, I felt. And knowing how local media sometimes treats these situations, I have a background in journalism, so I grabbed my iPhone and ran down there. When I arrived, by that time, Mike Brown's body had laid on the ground for close to 4 hours. Police had separated citizens and Mike Brown's mom and family members from the site. She was angry and hysterical in the street. No one from the police department came to offer any information to her about the condition of her son, what had happened to her son, would not let her identify her son's body. And it became a standoff. So the tone of what's happened the last few days was set in the hours following the killing. Police formed a barrier, a human barrier of police officers. There was a standoff between the community. And luckily, we didn't have any violence that night. People were patient. They were hopeful that the next day at the press conference, which was announced, that there would be some hope of justice being served, that some information would be given to the family. That did not happen. They were very disappointed with what happened at the press conference, this narrative that does not align with any of the eyewitness accounts of what happened. Also that day, the mother of Michael Brown went on local radio and detailed her interactions with the police department since her son was killed. She described being cursed at, being disrespected, not being included, no information being given. And so people from all over the community, the ward I represent in St. Louis City is just a few miles down the road from Ferguson, and the death of this young man has struck a chord because, like I said, the tensions between the young black community and the police is the same whether it's in Ferguson or small municipalities around it or St. Louis City. And so people have come in support of the family and to air their frustrations at the situation.
Antonio, you were at a community meeting on Monday night. What are the protesters' demands, and have the police even released the name of the officer yet?
Not yet. So the police, the protesters delivered four demands. The first was the identity of the man who killed Mike Brown. The second was his immediate firing. As you might know, right now he is on paid administrative leave. The third was something very reasonable, which is that the Ferguson Officer Handbook be distributed to all Ferguson citizens so they know what police can and cannot do, the rules by which everybody is playing. I think these are reasonable demands. And the community has come out repeatedly over the last few days and had peaceful demonstrations in front of the police department. Even yesterday, in a peaceful demonstration, the police removed the protesters, even though they were standing lawfully on a public sidewalk. And I think the way that police have handled this with a heavy hand has made the situation worse. I think what we need at this time is to...
We just have 30 seconds, and I wanted to bring Cornell Williams-Brooks back. And you were just in New York meeting with Commissioner Bratton here where Eric Garner was just killed. We know what happened because there was a video taken. Now both the young man who took the video, Ramsey Orta, and his wife were arrested by police and said that they've been harassed. We haven't seen this kind of video in St. Louis. Your final comment.
Well, one of the things I'll note here is this seems to be one additional chapter in a larger tragic narrative, that being young people accused of minor offenses, underwhelmingly minor offenses, met with overwhelmingly major uses, excessive uses of force. This is being played out across the country, and what it speaks to is a need to change in policing culture and policing tactics. That is to say, the best way to protect the community
we have
is to
leave
fact
it there.
Respect the community.
Cornell William Brooks and Antonio French. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Matte. Thanks for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard for Saturday, August 9th. The King Cobras, Vince Johnson and the Plantation All-Stars, Papa Chubby, and more, all part of the Long Island Blues Festival, Cowmeta Park in Merrick, beginning at noon. Roseanne Cash, The Lone Bellow, Buddy Miller, and Jim Lauderdale will be at Damrosch Park, Lincoln Center Plaza, Manhattan at 6 p.m. Jessica Haynes, Claudia Jacobs, and Rory Kelly will be at Shorefront Park in Patchogue. Funky Meters, Van Gordon Martin Band will be at the Brooklyn Bowl beginning at 8. Josh Joffin, plus Stilettos and Steel will be at the Homegrown Music Cafe in Port Jeff Station beginning at 8. Sublime with Rome will be at the Paramount in Huntington Village, 8 p.m. The Bad Plus and Joshua Redman will be at Guild Hall, East Hampton, 8 p.m. The Long Island Philharmonic will be at the Heckscher Park in Huntington Village, beginning at 8:30. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Sunday, August 10th. Slam Allen, Lex Gray and the Urban Pioneers, Joe Louis Walker, and more at the Long Island Blues Festival at Cowmeta Park in Merrick, beginning at noon. Alan Toussaint will be at Joe's Pub, Manhattan. The Homegrown String Band will be at the Bayard Cutting Arboretum in Great River, 2 p.m. Richard Schindel will be at the Turning Point in Piermont, 4 p.m. Charles Bradley, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Bobby Patterson, Music Maker Blues Review, all at Damrosch Park, Lincoln Center Plaza, Manhattan, beginning at 5. The Nancy Atlas Project will be at Gosman's Dock in Montauk. Donovan Frankenrider with Tom Curran will be at the Surf Lodge in Montauk, 7 p.m. Three Dog Night will be at City Winery, Manhattan, at 8. Room Full of Blues will be at the Heckscher Park in Huntington Village.
Singers, the songwriters, Richard Thompson, Ellis Paul, Bob Dylan, and many more Sunday Street with Charlie Backfish. Sunday mornings starting at 9 on WUSB Stony Brook.
And it is 6 o'clock time. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
It's
and
not
it,
6 o'clock. You're lying already.
Okay, no, it's 6:05.
Damn.
You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. Time for Off the Wall. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome, everyone. This is Off the Wall. I'm the guest engineer this evening, Kyle, and I'm joined by your host,
Emmanuel. But, you know, if you're behind the board, technically you're the host and I'm the guest.
Is that true?
Well, I sure feel like the guest because I can't hear anything that's going on. And, well, the usual pyrotechnics going on here. You see what just happened? I'm trying to move the microphone so it's in front of my face and it just moves away.
You're right, it is. It's moving it. You know what? That sounds like it needs a little oil.
I think this whole place needs a little oil. Mm. Some of this place needs oil and a match, but we'll get to that some other time.
Yeah.
So how you been this whole week? It's been crazy on a number of levels.
A bit here and there, yeah.
Internationally, nationally, locally, personally.
Tumultuous. All over.
Where do you want to start?
Well, we could. I almost set a kettle.
You want to talk about that? Okay.
Let's dive right in.
Almost burned down.
I was dealing with some other stuff, and I was doing something in the kitchen, and I didn't put enough water in, but I thought I would just, you know, top off my warm beverage. And I came back to what was left of a functional kettle.
It's not so much you didn't put enough water in, it's that you didn't come back while the thing was busy kettling away.
It led to quite a bit of a air quality hazard, let's put it that way.
It led to another revelation, which I think is even more disturbing. Yes, if you leave a kettle going, it'll melt and probably catch fire with something. I think that's what we determined, is that it would have eventually lit something on fire. Could have been really bad.
Yes,
but
to say the least.
With the entire house filled with smoke, you would think the smoke detector that's literally right next to the stove would have gone off, but it did not. And, you know, I was looking at this thing. It's from a company called First Alert, but you know what? It should be called Last Alert because they never told us anything. It's supposed to have a flashing light that flashes once a minute if it's operating properly. Mm-hmm. And then there's the button you press to test out to make sure it beeps. And boy, did it ever beep when I tested it.
Right.
And it's flashing happily, but it doesn't actually detect smoke. And I think, you know, people said, that's why you got to get more than one. What other product that doesn't work would you get more of because it doesn't work? You know, that doesn't make any sense to me. The other thing people are telling me, and it's almost like Google makes these things. People are so defensive of it. They say, well, yeah, you have to change these every couple of years. When did you get it last? Who keeps track of when did I buy this fork in the kitchen? I don't know when I bought it. And yeah, maybe there's a year in the back. Maybe there isn't. I'm not going to reveal that information. It's not relevant. The point is, if they can make a tone that tells you when the battery is no longer going to work, they can make a tone saying that, by the way, this device is completely useless now and no longer works. So I think that's something. It shouldn't. The onus should not be on us. That's one of your phrases, I think.
Yeah.
Regardless. Basically, it should not be on us to have to figure out when this thing goes bad. It should be able to somehow indicate, either by not taking a charge anymore or by sending some kind of alert. Maybe it's tied into the date. You know, a few years after you buy the thing, you get a little tone saying, buy another one because this is no good anymore. It should not come to the point where you fill a house with smoke and then realize it doesn't work, even though it says it does.
I think you're right in this situation. Absolutely. Like, that's what happened. And it seems like the cheaper versions are a lot more disposable, and they expect you to buy them constantly. And I think you've been down this path before, because I know you have plenty of coverage as far as smoke detectors.
I have so many, I can't even count them. And some are carbon monoxide detectors. You know, you can't smell carbon monoxide, so who knows how many times that's failing.
Yeah. So this is something we're going to look into as far as devices.
My IQ has gone down 30
safety.
Points in the last year alone. All right, and I think that might be because of carbon monoxide poisoning, but there's no way to prove it. And every year I'm less able to prove it. So look at your detectors, folks, and test them for real and see if they actually work.
Yeah, this in the closing was basically a wake-up call because we realized something wasn't working quite so well. But Anyway, I'm going to be more attentive just in general, and I think that's a great place to start. Let's be attentive in the world. There's a lot of things around you and in your space, and I'm also I'm also going to be refreshing myself on safety.
Yeah, let's let June be the month of safety. All right, that you basically we will spend the entire month just going over certain things and making sure that we're getting them right.
Yeah, simple things you don't think about all the time, but, you know, this is when you have a lot of outdoor events and things like that, and there's always the fire season itself, and
it's
you know...
August?
It's August. This is dog days,
wait,
man.
I thought it was June. Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I missed some things then. August, okay. Well, then we have 10 months before safety month, because it's...
Oh,
it's,
right.
I made it June.
You know, you're right, but
so let's not worry
we'll
about
be
it.
Ready for it then.
Yeah, but we got 10 months to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moving on then. what else has been happening? Any other adventures or close calls or things like that? Found a beehive or a wasp nest. We're not sure which yet.
Yeah.
Yellow jackets look very similar to honeybees, and one of them are kind of friendly and one of them are very hostile. We're trying to figure out which. I, you know, we have this thing literally next to the front door. It's a great welcoming to people that you don't want to be there. But I'd like to know, are these the kind that will attack you or the kind that will, you know, leave you alone? Either way, they're staying put. I'm not going to destroy them like most people would. I think it's kind of cool to watch them come and go.
Yeah, and welcome them and get involved in their culture a little bit, coexist, don't stir things up, but definitely
haven't been stung yet.
Take some interest and find out more about them, what their plans are, what they're doing there.
We did some testing and found that something like about 20-30 of them enter and leave within a minute. And it's incredible because they're coming from far away and they just go make a beeline. I know where that phrase comes from now.
Exactly.
Into the hole, which is on the side of a wall. And they just kind of shoot into there and report their findings. Then they leave. It looks like they're carrying things too sometimes.
Yes.
And it's just really, really incredible to watch this part of nature. There are so many little systems going on that you might not be aware of. At night, the loud insects come out. This is August now in Long Island.
Yeah.
It's a loud month outside at night. So if you walk around outside, you'll hear these insects. And you know, I've never seen one of those insects. They make all this noise. How do you even describe the noise?
It's not a squeak. It's a,
it's a katydid. It's a, it's some other kind of
a swelling kind of rhythmic, pulsing, but it's a tone. It is a type of sound, not a growl. I would say not a squeak either.
Yeah. I'm going to try and find it on,
I don't know what you would call that with insects.
Well, it's
what
like
they emanate. What sounds?
It's not a cricket. They're related to crickets, and of course, crickets are still out.
Mm-hmm.
But these are much louder. Cicadas, I think, is one word for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know so little. I've never seen one. I don't know what they actually look like. They could be 6 feet long. They sound like they are.
Yeah.
But I've never actually seen one. And they come out at night. That's a whole system of insects that's out doing their thing at night while the bees or wasps or whatever, they're sleeping inside their nest.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of other insects and animals out there doing their thing.
Yeah. And I enjoy it. The chance to listen to that thriving bit of the world. And you just remember, wow, you know, nature's getting on. They're going to be all right, all these different communities and cultures, and it's all kinds of interactions going on, and it is really sort of magical at night. And oh, you know what other things? I've been doing some looking up a bit, as we do. There's
what
I saw a couple satellites, I think, recently.
Literally looking up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And also the supermoon was this weekend.
You know, I'm sick of hearing about the supermoon. Okay, so what? It was like 10 miles closer to us?
Okay, well, anyway, there was a full moon this weekend.
There's a full moon. Yeah, I've seen that before.
So things, that, I think, in metaphysical sense, is making things a little hairy.
Yeah, yeah. But it kind of messed up the meteor shower because it's a full moon and you couldn't see anything.
Yeah, totally messed that up. And that actually is sort of a bummer, because you always like to see things passing over quickly and passing by in space. And those are a little less common than the moon.
I'm trying to load Katie's sounds, and I'll tell you, the internet connection here at this university, it's shameful. It really is. Okay.
Anyway, I meant that in the sense of like lunacy and lunatic, things being crazy. That you know, not working quite so well. Realizing things are, well, I guess maybe it's the heat too. I don't want to bring weather into it.
No, don't bring weather into
it. But it is kind of interesting to see and be attentive, be aware of what's going on around you, and making sure things function the way you would like, instead of breaking in these sort of witchy ways. It's a little bizarre, and makes me think of October or fall. And is that part of August? Is letting go of a little bit of the summer?
No, not really letting go yet, but I guess the last throes of it are upon us.
Well, there are a lot of spiders out.
Yeah,
they're spiders. Gearing up, definitely.
Wow, I can't connect anything. I'm sorry. Folks, you're going to have to look it up. Don't worry. Starbucks or something, get a real internet connection.
No, you don't have to worry.
This university is pathetic as far as internet goes. I cannot even get started.
Well, it's
last
okay.
week, the stream was down. Do you know that? That's why we couldn't get calls from outside the literal area of people listening. So that's just how it goes.
I saw some messages about that, I think in IRC or something, yes.
Everybody was talking about
Everyone,
it.
Everyone, yes.
So, yeah, it's August. It's loud outside at night. The supermoon came by. Other things. We found out about these people called the Yazidi that we never heard of before, now United States is all about rescuing, and it's interesting. You saw
airdropping.
This. Airdropping. Well, bombing the evil Muslims that are out to get them, who are known as the Islamic State, not ISIS. Okay, people were confusing it with the Bob Dylan song, so they renamed. They changed their name. I wonder how that works. They were the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. That was what ISIS stood for, and then they changed their name to just the Islamic State, which I guess opens up all kinds of expansion possibilities. But how do you get that word out? How do you send out an official on ISIS or IS letterhead saying, from now on, our name is the Islamic State IS? The United States, all the media here, is still calling it ISIS.
Yeah.
We didn't get the memo. We're not following the protocol. European media is calling it Islamic State IS. So that right away is a point of contention. These people have just materialized, and they are, you kind of likened it to Game of Thrones, where it's an army of people just running through the countryside, beheading people left and right, and all sorts of horrible things going on.
They're putting heads on spikes, too.
They're putting heads on spikes. It's a long tradition.
So they're excited about the next season, I guess.
Don't know if any of that is accurate. Obviously, none of us do, because we're relying on the same media that can't get any story correct, and a government that never tells the truth. It could be. I mean, there are crazy people everywhere. There's all kinds of religious fanaticism and nationalism and all sorts of things like that.
Right.
So it's entirely possible. What I find interesting is that these Yazidi people were basically, am I pronouncing it right? Yazidi? Yazadi?
Yazidis.
Yazidi? Okay, whatever. I never heard of them before.
I think the Y is silent.
They were forced out of their homes. They had to go onto this mountaintop. It was like something out of the Bible. They were driven away, and there they were, being threatened with all kinds of horrible things if they didn't convert. And yeah. So we had to step in and bomb those people and drop food. And I thought it was actually probably a good thing based on the way the story was told. But I wonder, you know, you have these other people that were being terrorized and were starving and in need of help. But the only problem with them was that they were in the Gaza Strip, all right? And Israel was bombing them into the Stone Age, and they were starving, and they were feeling all kinds of threats, but we didn't lift a finger to help them. It's just kind of interesting how one is a no-brainer. Yeah, of course, we have to help these people. They're in trouble. And the other is like, yeah, it's too bad these people are getting killed with our money, with our bombs, but what are you going to do? It's just... It just strikes me that it's really the hypocrisy
Yeah, you can't be everyone's friend everywhere. And if it's a done deal in one place, yeah, you move on and sort things the way you can best see that in another place. And I guess Iraq is sorted in another way. And that's what we're seeing is that, well, when we need to, we'll do things in the direct targeted places. And that's, yeah, okay, that's the style that we're seeing. While, you know, a lot of other things are going on as well, like these things along the Ukraine border and the dealings with Russia. And they're starting to talk about Russia-China alliances in the news. I'm starting to hear that a little
bit. Oh, really?
Oh, it's great.
Oh, okay. Well, back to that.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big deal in the Cold War. It was the Soviet Union and China basically.
Well, the sanctions, apparently China can help with, produce and stuff now because of the U.S. sanctions.
Yeah, and the sanctions against the United States. It's like, you know, we were too bored living in peace. We have to have war, and we're going to get a war somehow, a big war. You know, the wars that we've been having, Afghanistan and Iraq, it's more invasion. It's not really a war. It's a mighty power against people throwing stones and whatever. And while, yeah, you can get all kinds of casualties and people whose lives are destroyed on both sides, it's not really a good war that the Discovery Channel is going to do documentaries on for decades to come. And that's something that I think a lot of people are wishing for.
Yeah.
I just see, you know, the conflicts everywhere, instead of being dealt with, are escalating. And we're just not doing enough to look for solutions.
It's tension. It's a lot of tension and disruption in the most unlikely places, I guess. So all the more reason to be vigilant and paying attention.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. First of all, I don't want to come off as being specifically on one side or another, because I saw a lot of stupidity in what was happening in Ukraine initially with Crimea. You might recall that. I see a lot of bad things on the Russian side as well.
Right.
With this whole Israel and Gaza Palestinian thing, there's evil on both sides. A lot of bad things are basically represented from everybody. I'll give you an example. In Paris, about a week and a half ago, I believe there were demonstrations against what was going on. And people started basically destroying synagogues and trapping people inside them and horrible things like that. And there were a minority of people shouting, kill the Jews and all that. You know, there's always going to be idiots on any side. You cannot let them define the message that you're trying to get out. And those people need to be widely condemned and stopped. But then you have a situation where in France, they have this pro-Israeli demonstration, and then the pro-Palestinian demonstration is banned. Uh-huh. So when you do things like that, yeah, you're going to incite people to be hateful and to feel like they're being kept down. There's a tremendous Arab population in France because France was a big presence in Algeria and places like that. Those people are French citizens, so a lot of them happen to live there. You can't just ignore that. You can't just basically tell people, yeah, you know what? You're not allowed to have a mosque, but we're going to build three temples and things like that. That's how you build up all sorts of resentment and get all kinds of ignorance flowing in the streets and in the government and all that. There's a lot of bad on all sides.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize that. We have to be able to stand up and criticize and take action when something horrible is happening. There's a lot of talk. John McCain is always standing on his soapbox saying that we needed to bomb Syria a couple of months ago because they were bombing their people. Okay, so what do we do about Israel, who also is bombing, their own people because they are controlling them. They built a wall around them. Like it or not, they are under their control, and they're bombing them to smithereens. So, okay, do we bomb Israel then? Because, they're using our weapons to do it, but still, they're doing the same thing. They are, but they're our friends. And they have to defend themselves. But they're defending themselves against the wrong people, against the victims, against innocent civilians. And obviously, they don't know what they're doing. If they were walking around firing guns, they'd be firing guns indiscriminately. They'd be one of those people that doesn't know where to aim. They're just aiming all over the place, and everybody is the enemy. And we try to stop that because that's irresponsible. So we need to start asking those questions. There's this guy, a professor, pro-Palestinian college professor, University of Illinois. His tenure was rescinded because he made anti-Israel tweets about the war in Gaza. Now, he said, these are some of the things he said. Israel's message to Obama and Kerry, will kill as many Palestinians as we want, when we want. P.S. F.U. Pay me. Hashtag Gaza. Now, you might not know that that's a line from Goodfellas, and that's kind of a meme almost. But it was widely condemned for saying that. He also said, only Israel can murder around 300 children in the span of a few weeks and insist that it is the victim. Basically, his remarks were called loathsome. This person said, I find many of his tweets quite loathsome, as well as sophomoric and irresponsible. That's according to Kerry Nelson, a longtime English professor at university, past president of the American Association of University Professors. And this is somebody who supports the guy. So you can't say these critical things without being condemned for them. And the things he said, I don't see as being overly critical or in bad taste, just angry. And people have a right to get angry on different sides. So you have to allow this. You have to allow people to speak up and to vent their spleen, as it were. And maybe that way we get a dialogue going. We get some kind of progression, some kind of solution to the problems, rather than simply making the same mistakes over and over again.
And we will make those if we're not in tune with how we appear in some of our picking and choosing in these battles around the world and regionally, as it were.
Yeah. I see there's an editorial in the Detroit News. This time, let Israel finish the job. That's the feeling over there that, okay, they need to completely destroy the...
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you may not like who they elected, but they did elect Hamas to be their leaders. And you got to deal with that. If you just refuse to deal with that, then you're the problem, not mm-hmm. them. And yeah, they're lobbing these missiles. You know, did you see there was footage of a missile landing in Israel? And as usual, it landed in a vacant lot someplace and just was smoking. But that was a big deal because, oh my God, they're hurling missiles at us. Yeah, okay, three people have been killed by these missiles in the whole conflict, and that's a bad thing, but 2,000 people were killed on the other side as a result of those missiles. It's not a proportional response.
Mm-hmm. And that's just going to make the other sides emboldened in how they act as they proceed. So
yeah, and you get more and more desperate, you're going to do desperate things.
Especially when it does appear and feel so weighted in one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a good point.
I'd like to come up with a catchphrase, I guess. If I were Israel. Is that the right way to say it? Or if I was Israel? I'm going to say if I were Israel. It sounds better. If I were Israel, and then have a scenario. If I were Israel, and these kids were running on my lawn, I would go to their parents' house and flatten it with a bulldozer. Yeah, that's about the proportion of response. Kids running on lawn, well, you flatten the parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, they do flatten houses over there when people are accused. Not even convicted, but accused of being terrorists or mischief makers in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they got the bulldozers lined up.
Yeah.
On the regs.
Yeah. Anyway, that's all I want to say about that particular issue. But I did want to say something about it.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did.
Thank you. Thank you. Most people aren't. We have some exciting things coming up this weekend. Did you know? Actually, you do know because we talked about it before. The World Cup is over, but now the real cup begins.
Yeah.
The FA Cup. Yeah, it starts. It's already starting. In fact, in some countries, the football leagues have already begun. In this country, it runs over the summer. It's a little bit different. But overseas in Europe, they begin in August. But what also happens, the various cups in every country also begin their competition. You have the regular season, and whoever finishes in first place at the end of the regular season is the champion.
Yeah.
And then you have the cup, which basically is this elimination tournament that takes place throughout the season and ends pretty much the same time that the season ends. And then you have what is known as the cup winner. And sometimes the cup winner meets the season winner, and they all go on to the UEFA Champions League that represents all of Europe. But what we're focusing on right now is the Football Association Cup, the FA Cup that takes place in England. It's beginning on Saturday. Actually, it's beginning on Friday, Friday and Saturday. They're going to have 184 games this weekend coming up. 184 different games.
Yeah.
It's called the extra preliminary round. They have the preliminary round. They have the first round qualifying. Right. They have the second round qualifying, the third round qualifying, and the fourth round qualifying. And then it gets going for real. That's when the big teams start entering. The big teams don't play at this level. Only the small teams play at this level. So what we're going to do, what we decided to do, was go through some of the names of the teams that will be playing this weekend and pick our favorite. Not favorite based on anything other than the fact that we like the name.
All right?
Yeah, and this, they have so many levels in British football. This is the 10th level. So how it works is if the team in the 10th level finishes on the top of their league, they advance to the 9th level. If they finish at the top of the 9th level, they advance to the 8th level. In other words, one of these teams, if they just won a whole lot of games, they could find themselves in the Premier League at the very top with Manchester United and Liverpool and all those teams. It never happens, but it could. And also, what never happens but could is that one of these teams could win the FA Cup. If they just win in about, 10 or 12 different competitions in a row, they would find themselves at the very, very top. But right now, we're going to the very, very bottom, and we're going to...
All the way.
All the way, yes, as you say. So you want to go through some of these team names?
There? Right then. Look, so I'm going to tell you straight away.
Oh, boy.
Look, I'm looking right at them. Nottingham Griff.
Don't try this at home, folks. That's, yeah.
Nottingham Griff.
I don't even know what you're saying.
Nah. I'm telling you, they're it.
Speak English. I can't understand what you're saying.
They're going to win.
Okay.
This matchup will be legendary.
Legendary. Okay. Well, what we need to do is pick a team, and then we'll look at their Wikipedia page, because they all have Wikipedia pages. And we'll become fans of that team. And if that team wins, we become real fans of that team, and we root for them next time. I think matches are about a month apart. And if they lose, then the team that beats them, we become fans of that team. So either way, we're going to make it all the way to the final. But it's going to be with a lot of interesting teams.
Yeah, right. So, shall we start?
I thought we did, but okay, let's start. That's for real.
Okay, in reality, we're going to look at this, the matchup or the team? Which one do you want to do?
It's funny how your accent just sort of dropped away.
What do you mean?
I don't know what you're talking about. You probably can't hear it. let's go up with some teams first. Just some of the better sounding names. Just tell me some of your favorites.
Some of my favorites? Yeah. Okay.
We have matchups between the ninth division.
This isn't in any particular order.
No, not at all.
Go ahead.
Just any names that pop out on any of those pages that we printed out earlier.
All right. So we got the... Crawley Green.
Crawley Green?
Yeah, Crawley Green.
Okay, that's the name of a team.
Yeah, right. And the Staines Llamas.
Oh, wait, no, hold on. I got to look that one. How do you spell that?
S-T-A-I-N-E-S.
S-T-A-I...
N-E-S. Staines with an E-S.
N-E-S.
And Llamas. L-A-M-M-A-S.
Okay. L-L... I'm not seeing that one. S-T-A-I-N-E-S. Is that correct?
Yeah, Staines Llamas.
L-L-A-M-A-S?
Yeah, Llamas.
Yeah, you found the one team that's not listed anywhere.
Right, then we'll move on.
Yeah, give me another one, please.
Okay. Holker Old Boys.
How do you spell that?
H-O-L-K-E-R.
Okay, yeah, I got that one.
Holker Old Boys.
Old Boys FC, meaning football club.
Yeah.
They are an English football team based in Barrow-in-Furness in Cumbria.
Of course.
Which is in England. The club play in the Northwest Counties League Division 1. So let me tell you some history about this particular club. They originally competed in the West Lancashire League. They joined the Northwest Counties Football League Division 2 for the 1991-92 season. And there's some information about how they did. Their home ground is at Rakesmoor Lane, just across the road from Barrow Golf Club on the outskirts of town. And
yeah, but I don't play golf there.
The largest attendance for a game is 1,240.
Wow.
In 1995.
That's a good attendance. All right.
Yeah, they can hold 2,500. They've never even half filled it, but well, they've just half filled it actually. But yeah, that's the kind of team we're talking about. It's basically people you can hang out with, people from a village. And I mentioned they were in the Northwest Counties League. What that is, they have 41 teams in that one league, and they're in divisions 9 and 10 in the whole English football system. And it goes below 10 as well, but teams below 10 don't qualify for the FA Cup. So right now we have well over 700 teams that are qualifying for mm-hmm. this competition.
Yes.
Think about that in America. Nothing like that comes close to having 700 teams start off and only one become the champion. It doesn't work that way here. It works that way there, which is why I thought it would be kind of fun to follow it.
So we also we liked the Pontefract Collieries.
And okay, you can't just say words like that and not spell them.
Pontefract. Pontefract.
I got them.
Pontefract.
No, wait a minute. I don't have them.
Collieries. Okay. How about Knaresborough Town? That's Knaresborough.
You know, looking them up isn't as important as maybe reading names. Because
we should get through these. There's some great ones. Wigan Robin Park.
Wigan Robin Park.
Yes. Blaby and Whetstone Athletic.
You know, you could just probably start your own team pretty easily. And, I mean, you have to have some talent.
Yeah.
You can't just have a team and not know how to play the game.
How about the Wolverhampton Casuals?
Okay, the Wolverhampton Casuals, that's interesting because I know of a team called the Wolverhampton Wanderers. I know that's a real team.
Uh-huh.
But let me see if I can look that up. There, kids. Finn with you, Finn's Revolution, until 9 p.m. Tonight we have star of the band Cinema, Ev Gold, who's been on the show before. Always a riot, always a kick. A lot of stuff's been going on with them. A little hardcore, a little post-punk, and